All right, welcome back to another exciting adventure right here on Radio Wasteland, the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
That's your cue. Kara, do you have any news for us today?
Yes, I do. So first, I think we all heard the story from a little over a week ago about the Chinese rocket that was slated to drop space junk somewhere in a pretty shockingly large band of the Earth. The junk fell without incident into the ocean, but it's maybe time to answer some questions about this stuff. First, if space junk falls on your house, what happens? Well, according to space law, if Chinese debris lands on your house, then it's the responsibility of the Chinese government to pay for it, even if the debris actually belonged to a private company based in China. Same if, like, it's SpaceX debris, it would be the responsibility of the U.S. to pay for it. So if Chinese debris falls in your house, the U.S. would theoretically get compensation through diplomatic channels. Second, has this ever happened? No, the Earth is large and most of it is covered in water, but in 1978, a Soviet satellite did crash in the wilds of Canada, spreading radioactive debris from its reactor. The bigger problem, according to experts, is the increasing amount of space debris in orbit around the planet, which could make launching craft much more difficult in the future and cause problems for existing satellites. And also, some regulators want to crack down on cryptocurrencies after a massive increase in trading over the last year, leading to wildly volatile prices. Some financial experts argue that investments like Dogecoin, a joke currency named after a meme that saw its value increase massively over the last year, creating Dogecoin millionaires, are similar to playing the lottery in that irresponsible trading could cause a lot of ordinary people to go bankrupt. They also worry about the potential for fraud and manipulation and have raised concerns about how unregulated cryptocurrency have increasingly become a normal part of mainstream financial life, with JP Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs planning to offer crypto-based options to their investors. However, cryptocurrency and blockchain are inherently technologies built around anonymity, so it's not clear if they can be meaningfully regulated, nor do their users want them to be. The final issue is the immense environmental cost of using cryptocurrency. Bitcoin alone produces more carbon emissions than New Zealand, and the cost is exponentially increasing. In 30 years, it's estimated that Bitcoin alone, again, not counting any other cryptocurrencies, will add 2 degrees Celsius to global temperatures, killing a lot of people and creating tens or hundreds of millions of refugees. Back to you, Chauncey.
Okay, the Chinese rocket. This is all about space junk and debris. It's all about flotsam and jetsam at the core. Yeah, space law. I didn't know space law existed. Isn't that kind of part of the conversation we're having here, that we should have some sort of space law?
People are always arguing we should have more space law, you know. But there is a space law. There are laws agreed upon. It's kind of like maritime law in how it works. It's not really... I'm not really sure what the, like, ratification process is, but I understand that there's not a whole lot of, like, disagreement among different countries about how space law works. Pretty much everyone agrees this is the space law, which is also just fun to say, space law.
Right.
But I think a lot of people are like, as we go more into space, it might be better to have more, like, because right now there's stuff like no one can own any chunk of space. That's good when your technology is limited, but... You know, once we start colonizing Mars, how is that going to work? You know?
How are we going to split that up, right?
Right, exactly. Once we can meaningfully, like, go into space and start accessing these resources in a useful way, we'll need amendments to space law.
I maybe need to look into maritime law. Like, let's say, okay, so I'm sure murder is illegal in maritime law.
Yeah, you're not allowed to kill people, even on boats.
Okay, let's say I'm killing people. Let's say I kill people in the middle of the ocean. Who tries me? Is there maritime courts? Specifically like the World Maritime Court?
No, I don't think so. I think maritime law has like provisions about, you know, whose ship was it? Then you go here, you know, who died. Maritime law is actually hugely complex, and I'm not like a sea lawyer. So,
Kara, your job here is to report on the news. Now, any question I have for you, you better have the answer in depth.
Oh, no.
So, a Mexican and a Frenchman walk into a bar on a boat in the middle of the ocean.
Okay.
I don't know the punchline. Okay, no, they walk in, and the Frenchman kills the Mexican.
Sure.
Is that, I wonder if that's, and I know you don't know the answer, I wonder if that's tried in courts in Mexico or courts in France.
See, I think it
they have to get together, or if there's a third party, or...
I think it probably depends either on whose waters they're in or on who owns the boat. My guess is whose waters they're in.
Well, I mean, maritime law, aren't there huge swaths of the world that are nobody's waters?
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. So, I thought it had kind of been divvied up. I'm not really sure. All the pirates listening to this broadcast are just beating their heads because we don't know.
But, yeah, totally. They're just all, oh, how can he not know that I'm the captain now?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Because those are the only pirates left. All right, moving on. Cryptocurrency. Bill Maher actually recently was going off about how cryptocurrency was affecting the environment because of all doing the mining and stuff.
It's actually a huge deal.
Yeah. It's wild.
It wasn't a huge deal when it was first started, but the whole idea of cryptocurrency is that the more energy you use to to mine more Bitcoin or whatever, the more energy you need to use to mine the next Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So we've created this system that requires, an exponential, potentially infinite amount of electricity.
Right.
Just in order to keep real
world value while creating nothing.
Exactly. And it's even worse because we're borrowing this value from like the future ability of humanity to not go extinct. But it's, people are very bad at the borrowing from the future thing. That's the thing people
have
like
a good
to do.
Concept of this stuff on the whole, and I can't say that I blame them. My personal view of the world is that people make it confusing on purpose in order to shut people up. But, a lot of people like electric cars. Oh, we need to get electric cars. It's like, where do you think that electricity is coming from? I mean,
sure,
it's
yeah.
What we need to do is top down this sucker. You know, it's like.
Right. I mean, ultimately, our power plants need to not be coal, you know.
Right. You know, I think that there's a big loss on the whole, and all of it is very confusing, and people are constantly trying to hide what it is. I'm surprised you didn't bring into the news, Bill Gates possibly being a bad guy.
The thing is, I don't care about him.
You don't care about him?
I don't care about Bill Gates. I don't care about the sordid lives of rich people. I don't know. I assume they're all James Bond villains until proven otherwise, which has never happened.
Yeah, but I mean, if they're molester, they're not molesting other rich people.
I didn't actually even hear about that. What?
Oh, yeah, supposedly. Okay, it's all over the news.
I knew he got divorced, but...
Oh, it's all over the news this morning that he was... sort of a philanderer and like constantly coming on to chicks and friends with Epstein and a lot of shady potential coming out about him.
Yeah, I believe it. The QAnon people are going to go nuts, but I don't know. I think it's just a lesson on what happens when you have so much money that there is no possible accountability for you.
If the QAnon people, maybe the QAnon people are right.
I mean,
or maybe
I think the QAnon people are right that a lot of rich people commit crimes.
Or maybe even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Yeah, I think it doesn't take a whole lot of like insight to guess that the people who have unlimited resources and no accountability might occasionally commit horrifying crimes because they can.
Oh, totally. If I had had that when I was younger, I would just be a terrible human being. I'm not saying I'd molest people. Don't get me wrong. I understand where this started, but,
So I don't think
I'd definitely mine a lot of Bitcoin. I'm going back to Bitcoin. I'd mine a lot of
Bitcoin. Okay.
All right. Coming up next, Dark Side of Salem with Sam Maltrusis. This is an interesting one. Cool one. Salem, not Oregon. Salem, Oregon, I'm sure is nice, but we're
also
talking about...
Also haunted in its own way.
Right. We're talking about old school witches, not new ones. So come on back.
Indeed.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Hi, this is Matt. I'm your host of Liberty Unabashed, a new show on Sundays, 8 to 9. We're going to have some good music, some deep thought, and I hope you check us out.
Aloha, this is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price, and after a few months, realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Wasteland. All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland, and our guest today is Sam Baltrusis. Ball like the...
Bounce the ball.
I thought ball like the god, you know.
Oh, well, that could be that too.
Right.
If there was another A in it.
Right. Well, if there was another L in it, then Kara.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's just interesting. Your mind went there. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. So tonight we're going to be talking about sort of the haunted history of Salem. Of course, we all associate Salem with the witch trials.
Right.
And you know, I bet you people are on the border as to if that was even fact or fiction. Well, I mean, of course it was fact that it happened to these women. I just mean the witch part of it, and then the ghost part of it, and then, you know, so it leads one to think, like, is there something shady going on in Salem that connects these things, or is this just sort of a carried-on legend? You know, how much stuff outside of the witch trials are we talking about? I guess through years alone, we're probably looking at quite a bit of history.
Yeah, so it's happened in 1692. So 20 innocent men and women were executed for witchcraft. What's interesting about the whole twist when it comes to the witch trials is I'm actually related to the bad guy. So the major accusers during the Salem witch trials, which is the Putnam family. So the Putnams were responsible for accusing 66 people altogether, and almost 150 people were accused and executed for witchcraft. I'm sorry, that's not true. We're accused of witchcraft.
Right. But that's even a lot more than I would thought were actually accused at the time.
Yeah, there was a lot of people that were accused, so it was literally like neighbor against neighbor. So the Putnam family accused their neighbors, like Rebecca Nurse was their neighbor. So it was an ongoing feud with my family and the town family, who had three sisters who were accused, including Rebecca Nurse, Mary Easy, and the third Sarah Cloyce, who wasn't executed. But that family has been kind of like a family rivalry with the Putnams and the Ghoul family, who I'm also related to.
And their last name is Gould?
Yeah, G-O-U-L-D.
Oh, Gould. All right.
It's interesting to me some people were accused but not, like, executed, because that implies that someone was, like, applying this some kind of standard to where it's like, yeah, I don't think this guy is consorting with the devil, but she's got shifty eyes, you know, like, what? It's... I don't know. My only, like, knowledge of this comes from, like, the play The Crucible. So I think, like a lot of people, I just have in my mind just this image of sort of out-and-out hysteria, just everyone accusing everyone else. So.
Well, I spent a lot of time. The Crucible is a great work of fiction. So a lot of people, that's their only take on the Salem Witch Trials.
Right.
Exactly. It's the play by Arthur Miller. And there's some truth in it. That a lot of the names are factually correct. And a lot of the tests that were given, they had, you would have to say the Lord's Prayer. And if you didn't say the Lord's Prayer correctly, then you were accused of witchcraft. But the ones that were actually executed were the ones that pled innocent to being a witch, which is really fascinating. The ones that pled guilty were kept in the witch dungeons for months, and they were eventually exonerated. So if you pled innocent, you had to go to trial, and then you were possibly executed.
That's fascinating.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. So if someone asked you if you're a witch, you want to say, yeah.
Right, yeah. That was a smart thing to do if you knew what was going on. Like, yes, I'm a witch.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Counterintuitive. Totally counterintuitive to what they were thinking at the time, though. You know, that they're all, whoa, not me, you know. I don't. How many, you know, of the hauntings, you know, a lot of old towns have hauntings just based on their history and stuff. So, and then we associate so much of this with the witchcraft of Salem. Is the witchcraft of Salem something that permeates through the hauntings throughout the years, or are the hauntings more associated with other histories, or does it tend to be wrapped up in that?
I find that the land is stained with blood. So what happened in 1692 has left a psychic imprint on the land. So I do think that a lot of the hauntings associated with Salem have ties to the Salem witch trials. Hmm. However, you know, there are some hauntings that are more recent. There's a woman known as the Lady in the Blue Dress that haunts a place called Rockefeller's. And she was supposedly murdered in 1830. There's other hauntings that are associated with Salem that aren't tied to the witch trials, but I will say that pretty much everything has a root to the Salem witch trials and the hauntings associated with the Salem witch trials.
Yeah, so I guess the belief could be that whether the witchcraft or not was real, that the trauma was real enough that the hauntings would persist.
Right, yeah, so when you... one gentleman, Giles Corey, was pressed to death over a 2, maybe 3 day period. And he was stripped naked. A board was put on top of his body, and then rocks were put on top of the boards. So he was smushed to death. And if I was pressed to death over a 3 day period, I would haunt Salem as well. And his ghost is one of the many hauntings associated with the witch trial still sticking around.
Really?
Yeah. Must look like a flounder.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was a horrible way to go. Yeah, and he probably did look like a flounder.
Yeah, that's crazy. So I guess let's start off with what you consider to be the biggest not biggest, but biggest as far as importance or anything, haunting in the area. Like, what, when we think of Haunted Salem, what story would we associate with that?
Well, so I've written 13 books altogether. Two of the books are on, one's called Ghost of Salem and the other one's called Wicked Salem. So I would say, like, there's not like one haunting that is like the granddaddy of all the hauntings. I will say that there are locations that have more reports than other locations, like the Central Burying Ground, which is in the heart of Salem, and it's a very old cemetery. Also Howard Street Cemetery, which is where Giles Corey was pressed to death. There's been multiple reports of seeing a man wearing old like date back many years. Those locations also have hauntings associated with them as well, including the Gardner Pingree Mansion, and that's where Captain Joseph White was murdered by Richard Crowninshield, and that murder has left a psychic imprint on the mansion, and it's still there. People report seeing a woman. They say that the murderer actually replays itself over and over again. And if you watch my episode of A Haunting, I was in the 100th episode of A Haunting, I actually picked up the murderer's, an attachment from the murderer, Richard Crowninshield, and it nearly killed me. So that house, in my opinion, is one of the most haunted locations, I would say probably in the country. It's a very haunted house.
I'm not familiar with that one. What was the situation of the murder?
So 1830, Captain Joseph White, was a sort of like a town, he was a trader, so he made his money from selling goods, including, Africans. So he was a slave trader as well. He had a lot of money. He was getting to the end of his life, and he never had any children or he wasn't married. So his niece, was, kind of like wanting to have, the property. So the story is that that she hired her husband and his brother to kill him. So they reached out to the local like black sheep, which is Richard Crowninshield. This is April of 1830. He breaks into the mansion. He has like an Indian club. So it's this large stick, and he has a dagger. So he takes the bludgeon, hits him over the head, and that actually killed him, but that wasn't the end of the murder. He took the dagger and stabbed him 13 times around the heart. When I told that story, I actually somehow channeled Richard Crowninshield, the one that committed the murder, and that spirit took over my body, and that was featured on A Haunting. It was like I actually took on the bad guy in a channeling session. I didn't know I was doing it, and I wasn't able to push him out. So his spirit's still around too. In fact, I actually, you know, had an attachment with his spirit, or his the entity.
Look, staying healthy isn't easy. Watching your diet, hitting the gym, avoiding stress. But a good night's rest helps boost your overall health and wellness. And it couldn't be easier. The new Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed is the only bed that effortlessly adjusts in response to both of you. The result? You wake up ready for anything. Proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. Save $1,000 on the new Sleep Number 360 Special Edition Smart Bed, Queen, now $1,799. Plus special financing ends Monday. Special financing subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. See store for details.
Compass Sports Cards, locally owned and operated at 1620 East Cypress Avenue across from Hill Collision Center, is your home base for trading cards and signed sports memorabilia with modern and vintage sports cards and collectibles. Compass Sports Cards features baseball, basketball, football cards, and is the largest supplier of non-sports Pokemon cards. Buy, sell, or trade with Compass Sports Cards, open from 11 to 6 Monday through Saturday. Do you have a collection? Have it appraised at Compass Sports Cards before or after hours at 1620 East Cypress Avenue. Call 355-2016 or stop by today and check us out on Facebook. Compass Sports Cards.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans' issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5, 1460 AM.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
Greetings, North State. Just a reminder here to be sure and tune in to Common Ground Radio Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock. You know, we have much more in common with one another than we normally recognize, but fail to see this thanks to our polarized media that deliberately divides us and demonizes the other side. Common Ground Radio is your progressive call-in talk show for the North State, right here on Radio KCNR, where we seek bipartisan agreement on many issues affecting all of us, using respectful, fact-based dialogue and starting for change from the progressive side of the street.
Listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us. How does that work? Like, when something takes over your body, do you step outside? Are you seeing it happen? Are you not even aware that it's happening? You know,
It's kind of weird. So when it was happening, it was the day before Halloween, and I was giving like a kind of like a spooky story discussion at a mansion, and I started telling the story. So I was basically playing Richard Crowninshield, the bad guy, and I played him so well that I was channeling him. So I was getting information from him in my mind's eye, and then I was like talking to him and asking him questions. And so before I knew it, I did it. I was kind of exhausted after I gave the presentation, and they were like, that was the best presentation, best reenactment of Richard Crowninshield I've ever seen. And I looked in the mirror and I looked like I had like jagged teeth, and I just looked off, like something was wrong. And I go home, and on the way home, I actually tried to, I felt like out of control, like I was like my body was doing like weird things, and my hand tried to open the door in the car that my friend Mike was driving me back home, and he's like, "What's wrong, Sam? What's going on with you?" And I'm like, "I'm just, something is not right, something is wrong." So it was an 8-day process of going in and out of consciousness with this entity. So I would wake up and I had posted things on Facebook, on Messenger. I was looking for like a dead, like skeleton, like a skeleton of a real person. And they're like, well, we have a fake skeleton. And I'm like, no, I want a real skeleton. Like weird kind of macabre things that were happening. Mm-hmm. So when I was going in and out of consciousness, at first I was like, almost like the back of my head. I thought I was sick. So I thought maybe I was just really, really exhausted, but got to the point where he was like kind of running the show. And my friend Joni Mahan, who was a fellow author, and she had an attachment that nearly killed her too, recognized what was going on. She reached out to our shaman friend, Michael Robichaud, who did a removal. And I saw the entity literally leave my body and fight his spirit guides. And this is the beginnings. I identify as a clairvoyant. So I see dead people. And it's something that I've always had. But after that removal, it kind of opened up my third eye. So I was able to see things now clearer than I've ever been. And now I realized that I was channeling him and I didn't push him out. So I wasn't trying to channel him. It just happened naturally.
So it sounds like hauntings. Oh, I was just going to say, it sounds like these hauntings can be dangerous.
They can be dangerous, especially if you have an ability to channel a murderer. It really depends. Just like spirits, just like people. If you were a good person in life, you're going to be a good spirit. If you were a murderer or a darker entity, some of the entities haunting Salem weren't actually people. There's a lot of like shadow figures and a lot of things that have been conjured over the years. And you can, whatever you want to call them, like thought forms, tulpas, or egregores, are roaming the streets of Salem. So these are entities that have been conjured by weekend witches. So they come in and they do like a summoning curse or spell, and things have been conjured. And, you know, there's a couple of shadow people in Salem that I've encountered over the years and other people have encountered that I don't think were actually humans before. So these are thought forms.
Sorry, Garrett.
So
like all these people who come, you know, just for a good time, they're, you know, dabblers, they, you know, throw around some crystals, say some magic words, that is actually like polluting the psychic whatever, that is like having an effect.
Yeah,
that's
it
horrifying.
Is.
That's
it really
the
is. They sell candles in the like the witch shops, and they sell the candles to like conjure a ghost. And you know what? Sometimes they do, and it is terrifying. And imagine all these people coming from all around trying to conjure things. They're able. Some of them are able to do that.
Yeah, that's the first thing that crossed my mind when Kara said that was like, it must be all the worse in Salem because, you know, nobody's coming to my town to do this, but you guys have a whole tourism industry based around this.
We do. And some of the stuff that they conjure up are horrible, horrible entities. And a lot of times I really question that the spirits that are haunting Salem are actually from 1692. You know, we do tell the stories over and over again. And I'm like, isn't something kind of mimicking that one of the victims of the witch trials? Cause you can get that too. So we're dealing with shadow people. I've had an encounter and other people have had an encounter with an entity wearing a hat or, can't say the word cause it's actually trademarked, but, it's the man with a hat entity, which had red glowing eyes. So there are monsters walking the streets of Salem, Massachusetts. And I don't know how they were pulled over from another dimension. It probably is these weekend witches that are doing it or something else.
Huh. Okay, so, you know, I'm sure Kara knows that this question is coming from me because I'm always interested in this, is these entities from other places, like witchcraft is associated with Christianity. Christianity is the one that, you know, did them in, or at least, under the guise of Christianity. You know, are these other entities demons, or is there another world? I'm always kind of interested in the, if there is another world, there must be a culture that goes with it. I'm always curious on any insight that I can get into a being that's not from here. So me leaving an echo or me leaving my soul, that makes some degree of sense to me. But when we're dealing with an entity from literally God knows where, you know, where are we talking about? I guess is my question. I don't know. I realize it's a very loose question, but I'm assuming it's a pretty loose answer given our understanding of all this stuff.
Yeah. So it's something that, you know, like, if I had to explain what I've encountered, I would say that some of the entities are not human. Now, where do they come from? Another dimension. And so would the other dimension be hell? You could say that. Or would it be like the third dimension or, you know, another planet? That could be possible too. There could be some sort of like tear in the portal between us, you know, our plane and the other plane, and this thing has come through. Now, I do know that some of the shadow people that I've encountered and other people have encountered in Salem are, they could actually be, former humans. So they may have, like, over the 300 years of being a spirit, they may have, like, kind of, like, morphed into something really nasty and negative. And, or they were, their thoughts were, I don't really know, like, what I would call the other realm that they come from, but I do know that there's sort of a consistent, theme to these shadow people, and they take the shape of people, but they're not people. You know, like they're humanoid in shape, but they're not people. They're monsters. Hmm.
And you know, Go ahead.
The other question that popped in my mind about this was, you were saying that it can be dangerous. So let's say we got a haunted building, and it can be dangerous if you go in and you're clairvoyant. You can be attached. But let's say I'm a hobo traveling through town, and I go into that same building and spend the night there. Is there any danger for that guy?
I think that you have to have a certain amount of sensitivity to the spirit realm to do it. But I have seen people that didn't know that they had that sensitivity, including myself. I mean, I've always been kind of sensitive and had a really strong intuition, but I was so far in denial that I was like, you know, the idea of channeling was just not possible for me. Like, I'm like, that's not possible. So I think that if you have that sensitivity or whatever that is, that connection to the spirit realm, it could be a danger for you if you have that sensitivity.
I see. So, you know, when people come through to, you know, I've found that a lot of these places, when we talk to people about the places, when people come through Salem, are the places that they're visiting, let's say on a haunted tour or something, are those the actual haunted places, or are those just the souped up places and the true haunted places are over here?
Yeah, so a lot of people, when they come to Salem, they expect it to look like 1692. And there are still some buildings that are standing that are from that era. But a lot of the locations, we do bring them to where it happened. But when you have people coming on my tours, they're like, well, it actually happened in Danvers and Peabody. And that's true, because Salem was a lot larger in space in 1692. So the actual witch hunt took place in modern-day Danvers. And where I picked up the attachment of Richard Crowninshield actually happened in Topsfield. So, but back in the 1692, that would have been considered Salem. So I guess, if anything, like the actual witch hysteria was a much larger strip of land. But when we do the tours, we do talk about locations that do have ties to the haunting. So the places, downtown Salem is probably, I would say, like the most haunted. Like, there's Essex Street, which is like the main drag in Salem. And there's a lot of locations on that strip. And some people say that there's a ley line, from down that stretch of land. And the ley line is sort of like something that's going beneath the surface. And, if you look at the actual, what Essex Street is, there was what was known as Judge's Row. So in 1692, the judges in the witch trials of the magistrates actually lived on that line. And at the very tail end of that line, that's where the executions took place. So there's kind of like a straight line of hauntings. And you know, some say that it's the ley line. It's in the land. Mm-hmm.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. For this month, we're reviewing Arturo Fuente's Hemingway Classic. With curves of a supermodel, this Perfecto has a superbly balanced, toothy, and attenuated Cameroon wrapper, and pairs exquisitely with a complex filler and binder that indulges the palate with citrus, coffee, cocoa, and cedar. Come down to the shop for your Arturo Fuente Hemingway Classic today, 2143 Hilltop Drive, Reading.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
Aloha, this is Kevin, Operations Manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Shasta Miners and Prospectors Association is a nonprofit group that helps small-scale miners and prospectors while educating the public about mining. They offer gold-bearing claims that members can use, and they hold monthly meetings that are open to the public. If you are interested in prospecting, mining, metal detecting, or treasure hunting, please join the Shasta Miners and Prospectors Association by downloading the application on our website.
Listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
When Arthur Miller's The Crucible came out, it kind of shined a new light on the witch trials. And instead of, like, fighting it, they kind of embraced it. And so I think that that you'll still find people who don't want to talk about the witch trials. It's almost, like, ingrained in us to be ashamed of it, like Auschwitz, like Hitler. You want to, like, move on. And, like, you'll see it. People that grew up in Salem, they're like, I'm so tired of talking about the witch trials. But everyone comes to Salem to see that and see the witches, and they just kind of have to kind of put up with it. I will say that the locals, they want to be they like the tourism, but it's also, imagine like your home being taken over by like thousands of people every year. Sure, it can get annoying, but when you move to Salem, you sign up for that, but you have people that have been like long time locals that have been in Salem their whole lives, and they didn't sign up. They were kind of born into it. It really has grown into this tourism industry that wasn't the case like in the 70s. Like it's grown and grown and grown over the years. And a lot of people that have been around, like the old timers, are like, "What is going on?" Like, I'm moving to Danvers.
Right. Yeah. Well, I understand that. I live in Ashland, Oregon, which is based around a different kind of freaky yearly festival. We have the Shakespearean festival, and the population is like 20,000, and 300,000 people come through every year for all the Shakespeare stuff in the streets. I wonder how, and you might not know this, I'm just going to wonder aloud, how Salem fared through the satanic panic and stuff of the 80s. I can imagine it might have been a weird combination of history and the news.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the satanic panic was really alive and well in Massachusetts. So if you look at a lot of the cases in Massachusetts, so around Salem, like there was the Fall River cult murders that happened in Massachusetts, and there was like this whole like Satan, there were like Satan worshipers. What's interesting about Salem is there actually is a Church of Satan in Salem, and it's like one of the headquarters. So it's almost kind of they talk about the Satanic Panic and actually compare it to the hysteria of the witch trials. So I think it's kind of part of local Salem discussion, the Satanic Panic. But I also think that it's happened all around us in Massachusetts.
Well, you happened upon a word that's one of our key words around here, something we're very interested in, and that's cult. What is the Fall River cult? I have never heard of this. I'm totally interested.
Well, what's interesting about this case, and I wrote a book called Mass Murders, and this case was featured in it. So there's a Freetown State Forest, which is actually right by the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast, by the way. It's part of the Bridgewater Triangle. There was a group of led by Carl Drew, who was like sort of like a pimp, and a lot of women who were into prostitution or kind of in the fringes of Fall River society, and they started basically gathering together as a cult, according to Robin Murphy, who was sort of like the female ringleader of the group, and they were committing human sacrifices in Freetown State Forest. So women were being killed. Very sickly, they were being used as part of like a human sacrifice ritual, like a black mass, and multiple women were killed in the 70s. And so there's a show that just came out called Fall River on Epix, and it goes into this case and looking at the players in the case, and they do say that it's part of the Satanic Panic. Because there were headlines in the local newspapers about the murders and the trial associated with it, but there's Robin Murphy and there's Carl Drew. Carl Drew said no, he wasn't doing that, and Robin Murphy says yes, you were, and the rituals were like part of the macabre part of it. Like it was really macabre, like really disgusting what Robin said they did, but Carl's saying that's not what happened and that she was the one doing all these sort of satanic rituals.
Wild. Love it. I love it. I don't know. I find cults really interesting because I have a hard time committing to things that I know I want to do. I mean, much less committing to a bunch of crap that I know I don't want to do. It's always amazing to me when these cults happen. And to be fair, I'm guessing that the Church of Satan that's in Salem is more of an anti-Anton LaVey nihilism, hedonism thing, and a little less of worshiping the Dark Lord.
Exactly. That's sort of like I'm not pro-Church of Satan, but I do think that, I think people have a place to, there's been a history of like extreme Christianity and like evangelical Christianity, kind of taking over Salem. And I think all sides should have, and they're progressives. They're atheists, really. They don't believe that there's a heaven or a hell. And a lot of them are witches. So it's more of a movement of kind of like saying, hey, a progressive movement saying like, hey, treat people good. And also the freedom of religion too is kind of like they wanted to have a voice. So yeah, they give tours as well. And so I'm friends with the tour guide at the Church of Satan. It's like, hey, what's up? Well, hey, Church of Satan guy.
Part of this is selfish for no pun intended, lack of a better word. I am on a personal crusade to try to get an actual Satanist on the show. Not a LaVeyan. Like somebody who truly like
someone who actually
the dark god with
Satan.
Cloven feet. And I have never found one. I've been looking all over and I know I'm not going to find one, but well, still I look.
So I have friends that may meet that. Richard Lyle Lillard, he's a Satanist as well. And I can give you his information. I don't know if he will fit the exact, like, what you're looking for,
right.
but he identifies as a Satanist.
Yeah, I've always just been really curious about it, and with all this talk of Satanic Panic and Satanism and witchcraft and stuff like that, there doesn't appear to be any actual Satanists in the description that these churches and these views, what these people fear doesn't actually seem to exist over here. And that's why I'm really curious as to, like, is there somebody who basically says, yeah, I just don't worship. I don't sacrifice people because it's illegal and I go to jail. But I mean, if I could, I totally would, because that's part of my religion. You know, it's like, does that person exist? That's what I want to find. But I'm getting way off topic here. We're coming not too far from the end here. You know, where's the best place that people can find your books? Your most recent and what we've been discussing here are Ghosts of Salem and Wicked Salem. Ghosts of Salem, Haunts of the Witch City, and Wicked Salem, Exploring Lingering Lore and Legends. Where's the best place for people to go for those?
Well, right now, I mean, I would say go to Amazon or BarnesandNobles.com and type in Stan Baltruces. I have 13 books available, including my upcoming book called Ghosts of the American Revolution, which has been bumped again to November. But yes, yeah, so I would say Amazon, but also bookstores carry the books. And if you go to your bookstore and ask for the book, they will be able to get the book for you. So I say support local indie bookstores as much as possible.
And what about Paranormal Rewind? Where's the best place for them to find out?
So if you go to ParanormalRewind.com, and it's on KCOR, which is based in Las Vegas, and it's available online, and you can listen to the show live 7 p.m. Eastern time every Tuesday night on KCOR, or you can go listen to the archives on ParanormalRewind.com.
All right. Well, you know, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you coming on, and I don't know if this is less structured, but we're kind of a rambling conversation around here, and I really appreciate having you on. You've been listening to Sam Baltruces here on Radio Wasteland, and Sam has a new book coming out, Ghosts of the American Revolution, hopefully in November, and hopefully you think of us and come on and talk to us about that book.
I would love to talk about it a lot. Really similar to the Salem witch trials, what happened in during the American Revolution.
Great. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you. Thanks again.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.